Welcome to the Asbury First United Methodist Church Weekly Sermon. We hope you enjoyed this message. For more information about this podcast or other ways to connect, please visit asburyfirst.org.
As Paula just alluded to, this is sort of a scary passage. It's filled with the kind of imagery that we expect to find in horror movies. Right up front, we encounter a demon-possessed man, a man who is so tormented that he no longer lives as part of his community, but instead wanders around naked in the graveyard. We find out that he has been seized by an army of evil spirits, demons, and that they have led him to damaging behaviors, and the townspeople have tried to bind him and guard him to protect him from hurting himself. But the demons are so strong that he simply breaks out of his shackles and is driven again to these dark, desolate places. Evil spirits, demonic possession, superhuman strength, an inability to contain all of that, all taking place in a graveyard on the outskirts of town. Suddenly, the gospel according to Luke sounds more like the gospel according to Stephen King. And adding to this horror movie vibe that we're getting from this passage is the presence of literal fear in the text. In the story, we have entire crowds of people who we're told are terrified, and then a few verses later are again told that they're frightened. So apart from all of that horror movie imagery, there's also just literal horror. Fear is present and pervasive in this story. And that's what jumped out at me this week as I studied this text, that fear. What is it that God is saying to us about fear? What is it that the Holy Spirit is reflecting back at us in the fear that's present in this story? And as I thought about that and reflected on it, what eventually struck me is the fact that all of that fear in this text is actually not connected at all to all of that frightening horror movie imagery in this text. The graveyards, the demons, the evil spirits, that isn't what instills fear in the people in the story. The frightening imagery all comes at the beginning of the reading in the first half. The scene is set with a demon-possessed man wandering the graveyard, breaking out of his shackles, screaming at Jesus, evil spirits crying out. But the fear of the townspeople actually comes after this man has been made well. The first time that fear appears in this passage is in verse 35, and it says, "The people went out to see what had happened, and when they came to Jesus, they also found the man. The demons had gone out of him, and he was sitting there at the feet of Jesus. He had clothes on, and he was in his right mind, but the people were terrified." And fear shows up again just a few verses later. Continuing in verse 36, it says, "Then all who had seen the man healed told about it. Everyone from around Gerasa begged Jesus to leave because they were so frightened." For some reason, the townspeople are more afraid of the man made well in his right mind, sitting calmly and quietly at the feet of Jesus, than they were of the shrieking, naked, isolated, graveyard-dwelling, demon-possessed man that he used to be. They're more afraid of Jesus and what he might do next than they ever were of the army of demons living on the outskirts of town and terrorizing their neighbor. That seems strange, right? So what is that about? I think that this man's wellness, this man's healing, or perhaps on this Juneteenth, we could call it this man's liberation from an oppressive force. It confronts the townspeople with a reality that they are not quite ready to accept, that they perhaps don't want to face. And this happens in two ways, one pretty tangible and concrete, and one maybe a bit more abstract. First, the healing of this man is terrifying to the townspeople because, to put it plainly, it affects their income. It affects their economy and economic security. When the legion of demons leaves this man, it dwells instead within the pigs nearby, all of whom immediately run into the lake and drown. This is great news for the man who has just been set free of these demons. This is great news for anyone who is not a fan of evil spirits. This is perhaps not such great news, however, for the owners of those pigs. This wasn't a wild herd of pigs. They were someone's property. And the men who are tending to those pigs are the ones who run into town to tell this story, to tell everyone what this newcomer Jesus is up to, and taking into account the fact that their livelihood, their business, the goods that provide them economic security, their property has just been destroyed, I imagine that their telling of the story is going to have a certain slant. They're probably angry and probably terrified of what Jesus is going to destroy next, what the next way that he upends their lives will be. And so the crowds that come and see this man made well are also terrified, because maybe their first question in response to this miracle is, at what cost? At what cost was this dramatic healing, this dramatic liberation able to have happened? And why should I have to pay that price? The townspeople are afraid because they see in this liberation a necessary shift in the balance of their community, a shift that directly affects the way that they live. This person's freedom and humanity are tied up in their property. In a very real way, this liberation costs something. It turns out in this story that freedom really isn't free. And that leads us to the second way that this man's healing confronts the townspeople with a reality that they might not want to face, which, as I said before, is maybe a little bit more abstract. I wonder if perhaps apart from shaking the financial security of this town, this man's liberation also shakes the townspeople's basic understanding of how things work. I wonder if they had developed an understanding, whether conscious or unconscious, of how society was ordered. That included thoughts about the kind of people who succeed and thrive and the kind of people who struggle or fail. About the kind of people who just naturally sort of belong in the center and the kind of people who just maybe belong better on the margins. About the kind of people who work hard and overcome obstacles, and the kind of people who are themselves overcome by demons and suffering. About the kind of things that should be freely given and what kind of things actually need to be earned. I wonder if they had developed understandings of suffering and poverty and oppression that accounted for the way in which this man was trapped, driven out into the graveyard, but they weren't. Maybe there was something about this man that the townspeople would use to rationalize why he might have actually a little bit deserved the difficult and tragic life that he was trapped in. Maybe the townspeople had a few ideas as to why this army of demons would choose him in particular. Or maybe it wasn't even that. Maybe it wasn't about this man in particular. Maybe they had simply developed some beliefs about demonic possession and suffering that had nothing to do with him, but that told them that full liberation for everyone was just too complicated or too difficult or even impossible. That there was no easy fix, that tragedy and poverty for a certain number of people was just a necessary evil, that it was built into the fabric of how things are, and we can lament it, and we can do our best to manage it, but that's pretty much it. Because the townspeople do care, and they do sympathize with this man. The text tells us that they attempted to bind him with shackles and to provide a presence with him in the form of a guard in order to prevent his erratic behavior, to stop him from hurting himself. They try to minister to him, but it seems like their attempts stop at managing harm reduction and don't quite get to liberation. And then Jesus shows up. And Jesus' healing of this man kind of blows up that whole worldview. Because Jesus' healing of this man shows that once freed of an oppressive and torturing force, once freed of an army of demons, it's clear that he's just like the townspeople and that he deserves a healthy and whole life. Jesus' intervention shows that there's no us and them, there's no necessary level of suffering, and that liberation is possible and that society doesn't have to look like it looks right now. This man's wellness, his wholeness, his liberation is tied up in the livelihood and economy of the broader community. His wellness and wholeness and liberation are tied up in the way that the community and society and world are ordered. And that is why his healing is scarier than his prior condition. His healing changes the community. The ripples of this miraculous healing, this newfound freedom, reach far beyond this man and these evil spirits and those pigs. There's a sacrifice made by the townspeople that is directly connected to the man's health and well-being, and that happens when Jesus shows up on the scene. To say that again a different way, when Jesus Christ is present, a sacrifice is made by the community that is directly connected to the freedom of a suffering individual. And sacrifice can be really hard. So maybe for some, sacrifice, change, perceived loss, that becomes what's terrifying or frightening or unsettling or uncomfortable. Maybe those things suddenly feel more like the stuff of horror movies. For some of us, probably those with privilege, those of us with wealth and stuff and power, this reality illuminated and brought to fruition by the presence of Jesus in our midst is far scarier than demons or graveyards. In commenting on this text, the Reverend Dr. Judith Jones, an Episcopal priest, says, "Jesus comes to challenge and cast out every power that prevents us from living fully and freely as human beings created in God's image. Jesus claims sovereignty not just over our souls, but over our lives here on earth. Many among us resist that news, finding deliverance from legion too frightening, too demanding, too costly. But those whom Jesus has healed and freed know that his liberating love is indeed good news, the gospel that he commands us to proclaim throughout our cities and our towns." There are oppressive forces at work in our world. There are oppressive forces at work in our city. And they are central to our lives, no matter who we are. Perhaps we're like the man battling legion. We can't live through a single day without directly suffering under these forces. Or perhaps we have a loved one, a friend or family member or neighbor or fellow church member who is like the man battling legion. Perhaps we're more like the townspeople, and in our minds, these forces exist at the margins, on the periphery. And we've tried to help with guards and shackles and whatever forms of immediate and temporary care we can think of. Either way, our lives are connected to the long-term systemic healing and liberation that need to take place. Either way, the way in which we live, the way in which we either uphold or challenge the current ordering of our community is directly connected to the fate of the evil spirits that dwell among us. Either way, the presence of Christ in our lives and in our community becomes a liberating force that stands in opposition to and rules over forces of oppression and suffering. The townspeople in this story are afraid. And what that fear prevents them from seeing right away is that actually the healing and restoration and liberation that Christ offers are not limited to the man who was demon-possessed. While the townspeople do sacrifice, through that sacrifice, they actually gain. The liberation of Christ, in a very obvious way, sets free the demon-possessed man. But can we see that it also sets free the townspeople? It also restores the entire society. It sets everyone free from being beholden to economic systems that directly lead to harm being done to portions of the population. It sets everyone free from living in a neighborhood plagued by evil spirits. It sets everyone free from living in a horror movie. It sets the townspeople free from their complicity in this man's suffering. The liberation of Christ empowers them to sacrifice and to let go of those systems and structures and stuff that are standing in the way of wholeness and fullness and healing and restoration for the entire community. While it may look at first like in this story, the demon-possessed man gains and the townspeople lose, the truth is that everyone gains when demonic spirits and oppressive forces are banished, when community is restored and relationships are mended. The way of the cross is a way in which loss leads to fullness, less leads to more. It's by losing our lives that we save them. It's by emptying ourselves of our possessions, in this story, both demonic possessions and material possessions, that we come to experience God's abundance. It seems scary at first, but there's ultimately joy to be found in this miracle for everyone. The initial reaction and narrative of those tending the pigs and of the townspeople is motivated by fear and loss that hinders their ability to see this fuller picture of a more healthy and more holy community, that hinders their ability to see the new life of liberation that they're being invited into. And so in the story, Jesus does something about that too. He leaves behind a witness, an evangelist, a teacher, in the man who has been liberated. While the previously demon-possessed man asks to stay with Jesus, Jesus tells him to go and to tell what has happened to him, because Christ knows that this man's perspective is important and will be different from the perspective of the rest of the community. Christ knows that his perspective and his testimony of liberation and healing is greatly needed by the rest of the townspeople. They perhaps cannot quite see the light yet, cannot quite see the freedom that they too are being offered yet. They're still captive to fear of loss or of having to give something up, and that fear is getting in the way. But the once demon-possessed man has experienced liberation, has experienced the light of Christ, and his testimony has the potential to open the eyes of the rest of the community around him. Jesus enters into the middle of a horror movie. He goes straight to the heart of the places ruled over by evil spirits, and he offers liberation. Liberation for the oppressed and tortured and suffering and marginalized. Liberation that might at first strike the broader community as terrifying, costly, and threatening, but that can come to be understood and experienced as liberation for all if we are able to embrace, welcome, and hear the testimony of Christ's evangelists, the poor, the oppressed, the outcasts, the suffering, the victimized, and the marginalized. So, church, which are we more afraid of? The stuff of horror movies, demons, evil spirits, graveyards, human suffering, or the way in which the presence of Jesus Christ in our lives will turn everything upside down in order to banish those oppressive forces? The way in which the presence of Jesus Christ in our lives, while freeing us of our complicity in our neighbor's suffering, will also make us complicit in their liberation in ways that are potentially uncomfortable. If you've read the Gospels, you know that both are genuinely scary. But only one leads us and our world to fullness, healing, hope, restoration, liberation, and resurrection. May we be courageous in our commitment to the gospel of Jesus Christ. May we be willing to lose so that all might gain. May we seek out and heed the presence and testimony of evangelists who have battled against demonic and oppressive forces. May Christ's liberating work be made complete in their lives and in our lives and in our entire community. Thanks be to God. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Asbury First Weekly Sermon. If you enjoyed this message, please visit asburyfirst.org and learn more about our mission to love God and neighbor, live fully, serve all, repeat.